Silent Spring Institute. I'm a toxicologist and scientist who came here because I've spoken with some of these reporters and wanted to actually meet them in person. I'm here for the toxicology meeting. And I wanted to go back to some of the questions that we started off at the beginning, of the mercury in fish. Should you eat it? Should you not eat it? They're small risks. These risks are small. We talked about comparative risks. These are common features of many environmental stories. And I want to ask whether there's a way to improve the framing of the question in the media coverage, and that is, rather than having to ask, should I eat the fish with the mercury or should I not eat the fish with the mercury, how do we get into the story as a question, what do we have to do to get fish without mercury? And same thing with the breast milk. It's probably something about chemicals in breast milk, and everyone's like, oh, no, should I breastfeed? Or, isn't breast milk still okay? And it becomes about whether it should be breast milk with chemicals or formula, and nobody's asking, well, how do we get breast milk without chemicals? How to reframe...
Reframing of the question, if I could just jump ahead, is...
The small risks, again, these are small risks compared, and because industry does this a lot, compared to crossing the street or driving your car or whatever, is... what's avoidable, basically. So looking at fragrances that have endocrine disruptors in them, and where there might be obvious alternatives versus something, where there's a bigger benefit, and bringing in the question of availability of alternatives.
Uh-huh. So framing of the question.
I think when you have reporters covering a beat the way we did, and you get on something, you do that. I mean, in 2002 is the year that when the Chronicle writes about Jane Hightower publishing her study in Environmental Health Perspective, showing that her very affluent patients, the ones who ate the big predator fish, had higher levels of mercury in their body than the ones that didn't eat. So that got us on mercury, and we wrote about mercury mines leaking into the bay, Dennis putting traps on their spitting things in the offices so people weren't putting mercury in the bay. We wrote about the good fish to eat. We wrote about sports people fishing and how they, could catch fish that weren't exposed to mercury and which fish had the mercury. We wrote about California's fight under the anti-toxics law, Proposition 65, to try to make the tuna fish canners warn in the aisles of a fight that the state attorney general lost. We looked at it from all angles. It wasn't just, what kind of fish should we eat.
But it's also how you minimize risk as opposed to whether it's safe or not. Picking up what Janet has already talked about, the question isn't so much, is it safe or not, but how do you minimize the risk?
And then the question should always be is what are the alternatives to that chemical? And there's a movement called green chemistry, which I don't know if many of you are familiar with, where you look at 12 different tenets of if industry is making plastic bottles or whatever, you look at the energy use, you look at the water use, you look whether waste is reduced, you look at the use of toxic compounds and whether there's less toxic alternatives or non-toxic alternatives. There's a real movement now towards that. It's a slow one, but it's starting to gain force. That whenever journalists need to ask the alternatives, it's like, okay, why is that chemical used to make Teflon? Is there anything else you could use instead, and why don't you use it? Same thing with BPA. and you have to follow up with the questions, though, is the new alternative any safer than the old one? Because lots of times we've replaced things with things that are worse.
So I actually wrote a paper a number of years ago, which I called, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire, where I was talking about the flame retardants and how some have been withdrawn from the market, but the ones they were using now were, in fact, might be worse. And so that is really an issue that, you know, sometimes we find out that there's a problem with a specific type of chemical or class of chemicals, and instead of asking the question, is there something else we could do that would provide more benefits, we immediately jump to finding, oh, we're going to find another chemical to use instead. And often, since there's really no requirement for testing of the chemicals before you put it into commerce, you sometimes substitute with something which turns out to be worse than what was there beforehand.
And that's one of the reasons they have this whole developing field of toxicology and chemistry that's known as life cycle costing. You should ask sort of what are the costs associated with what you have versus an alternative. And in most cases, industry and the public do not look at the full costs of a product. They look at maybe what it costs to produce it and what it costs to market it and what it costs to sort of dispose of it out of your house. But it doesn't look at what happens to it in the environment and down the road. And does it pollute water? Does it pollute the air? Does it make children sick? It often doesn't even get some of the upstream costs. Does it make workers sick? Does the emissions from the facilities that make it throw things into the air, which makes the whole community sick? That whole life cycle costing takes all of that into effect. That's when green chemistry alternatives look good, because when you look at the full cost, the things which look cheap, you know, if you just take the upfront costs, don't look so cheap in the end. But we have this big infrastructure investment and a lot of industry that's out there to try and perpetuate the status quo, which is the dirty and potentially very costly products. I think what we need to be asking are what are the life cycle costs of what we're dealing with, which people think are cheap, and comparing it to what we could have and might lead to a healthier society.
Fossil fuels.
Well, real quickly, we're going to wrap up with asking each of the panelists, you know, some take-home points and just one or two that come to mind. We'll start with John.
Well, I'm sorry. I was completely thinking about something. What did you just
say? We're going to start with Linda.
I can think of a take. I think the take-home message is, it is about trying to deal with uncertainty and recognizing that you just have to deal with uncertainty. I mean, it goes both ways. It's uncertainty can be used as a good thing, and if there's a little bit of information, it could help you from the precautionary principle standpoint. At the same time, uncertainty is used by people who want to promote the use of something as saying, oh, you know, it's really uncertain that it's that dangerous, so go ahead and use it. I think the other thing is you can personally use the precautionary principle for things that you can make decisions on, like whether or not you're going to buy something. The bigger problem, and this is where you need citizens' groups, is to try to get that into things for which we have no control over because somebody else is controlling it, like the use of fossil fuels or industrial chemicals that are put into products that we don't really know about. Nobody really knew about the flame retardants in the cushions and the carpeting and everything, right, because it's not something that we are aware of. So I guess that's the key thing, is use it your own personal way, but be active and use the legislative tools. Sometimes they're hard, but in California, you know, you guys tend to have more power than a lot of other states. So,
Jane, quickly, a couple points.
I think you have to work at minimizing your exposure. I mean, we spend hours, days, weeks picking kids' schools, safe neighborhoods, even buying a car, and you have to devote time to reading about the safest food and products that you can get.
Well, especially with the lack of quality journalism out there. I mean, we're seeing a real revolution now in what's happening with journalism. And people who call themselves journalists and sites that say that they're news, and it's everything out there on websites, as all of you know, isn't accurate. So be distinguishing when where you get your news from when you're trying to make decisions about what types of products to use and that type of thing.
And I would advocate that people not be complacent. Ask questions. Ask questions of your legislators. Ask questions of the companies that make the products you have. So many of the products, probably almost all of the products you buy, have ingredients that you will never learn about. And why is that? It seems to me everyone should be available on some website or something if it doesn't fit on the side of the box because there's 7,000 or something. But you should be able to find out what's in everything you eat and buy. That's not true, and it's not going to happen top-down. It's only going to happen if the public demands it.
Isn't there a part of the California law that passed, a clearinghouse of information for consumers, I think, is supposed to be included in that law? So there should be the states working on that.
Then you're lucky.
No. It's the toxics, the green chemistry law.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be working on information for consumers.
My comment would be about paying attention to the dose involved. I think it's obvious to most people in the room, but it's not to consumers. The average person that's calling us on the phone really needs to understand that the dose that they've been exposed to or may be exposed to is actually very small relative to the risk.
I can't let that go.
Nope.
Sorry, can't let that go because I don't think that's always true. And it may not be true for that particular person. You know, it would be different sometimes for a pregnant woman than it might be for, you know, a 50-year-old woman who's not having children anymore. Right. I mean, there are those nuances. I guess as California goes, so goes the nation, really, for good and for bad. You know, products that are made in California, they don't want to have to make them. If they have to meet certain standards in California, you know, they're going to sell them in the rest of the nation, for good or for bad. So the reason that we have the problem with flame retardants in this country is because of a California law that says you have to put chemicals in. It doesn't say you have to use materials that don't burn or that you can't put in batteries. It says you got to put chemicals in. So they're now throughout the country, highest in California, I should say. But anyway, that's one point. I think the point is moderation in all things is something that actually often also makes sense. You know, you don't have to go to the extremes. But if you hear about something which may be a problem, you may want to think about, do I really need to do that? I mean, I stopped microwaving in plastic about 15 or 18 years ago because there was a little bit of data that said, you know, when you raise the temperature, molecules move faster, and they can come out of the plastic and get into your food. And I thought, I don't have to microwave in plastic, you know. I can put my stuff, you know, into a glass bowl or something. So you can do things that make sense. And the other thing is that I would say is that I remind all of us that we are a kind of animal. And so that if you hear that, for example, the population of certain species has crashed, and they say that that's because there was some contamination, shouldn't that say to you, uh-oh, could that be a problem for me?
Does it have to end? We got a lot of good information and a lot of information I'd still like to hear maybe in a part two, such as I wanted to know a little bit more about the new media. I've heard about the difficulties with newspapers and so many things coming out now in blogs and Twitter and Facebook, and anybody can be an expert, and this could definitely pose as a challenge both to the scientists, toxicologists, and the journalism community, so maybe you can pin them down after we close with questions like that. I want to express my appreciation to the Commonwealth Club for sponsoring, hosting this event, to Bill Grant, who's the members-led forum liaison for the club, to the panelists, our moderator, to all of you for your support coming here and your interest in this. I think on the chairs there were a list, two-page list of resources that you may want to consult. It's highly selective, but they're pretty reputable databases, organizations, books, and other tools to help you make sense out of all this. I've also brought on the side table there are DVDs and printed literature from the Toxicology Education Foundation, that's a charitable group concerned with public outreach, and in fact their DVD is called Is It Safe? So many thanks, and take care.
Thank you.